If we're all ready to go, I will call this meeting to order. And unfortunately, I do want to say to Vice Chancellor Abba, that was fantastic information. I hope that the board will get a chance to dig into it more when they're not so rushed. So we will start out with, I will call this meeting to order. This is the Business, Finance, and Facilities Committee of the Board of Regents of Nevada. Can we have a roll call?
Chair Hayes.
I'm here.
Vice Chair Carvalho.
Here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Moran.
Yes.
Regent Page.
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. We start out our meetings with public comment. During this time, anyone from the public is welcome to speak to us on any item to be taken up on this agenda, or they can actually make requests for things we brought up on other agendas. We may not take action on any item that is not included in this agenda, and we will not be able to go and do a back and forth with you over an item that is not on the agenda, but we welcome your comments, your thoughts, and your input. Do we have any public comment at this meeting?
There is none at this time.
Okay. As you can all tell, I'm having fun. This is my last BFF committee meeting. So we're going to be efficient and fun today. So I see Regent Moran up on the main screen here. Hey, Regent Moran, you want to have some fun today? Consent item number two. Is there anybody that wants anything pulled from the consent agenda to discuss in further detail? I'm going to ask that we pull the go ahead. Yes, Regent Carvalho.
Can I ask for the items F and G, the real estate purchases for UNR, to be pulled from consent, please?
Certainly. Anybody else have anything they want pulled? I'm going to ask that we pull the item E, the crime statistics, the Query Act statistics. So here we are. We're short on time, and we're pulling stuff. We'll be fine, though. So with that, would anyone like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda except for items E, F, and G?
So moved.
Second. Well, I call it was a motion by Regent Page, second by Regent Carvalho. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? That motion passes. All right, so we will go with item number two. I'm going to start with 2F, Regent Carvalho requested. So, Regent Carvalho, do you have some questions, comments, or some concerns you want to lead off with on that before we ask President Sandoval and his team to chime in?
Thank you, Chairman Hayes. I wanted to pull these out separately, partly because for consistency, there are some purchases that we need to approve for UNLV as well. So I felt that for consistency's sake, it might be a good idea to do this. And I have spoken with President Sandoval and Mr. Redding about both of these. I just want to say that, you know, during these economic times where I understand it's very difficult for our system, to be looking at acquiring more real estate may raise questions and concerns. So I wanted to have a discussion regarding purchasing these, especially the item that we're speaking of right now, the property at 1056 Evans Avenue in Reno. I would like to ask President Sandoval how the university will be purchasing, what funds the university will be using to purchase this property. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to you and through you to Regent Carvalho, and good morning to all of you. The funds
which will be the source of payment for this property at 1056 Evans Avenue, will be the University Property Acquisitions Account.
Thank you, President Sandoval. Thank you for that.
I am the chair. First, President Sandoval, welcome again. I guess you're not that new anymore, but we are quite so formal on our committee hearings that you need to go to you and through you, at least the committee that I'm chairing. We'll see what happens when I'm not chairing it next month, but I appreciate your respect for the committee and the board, but we can dispense with that if it's all right with you. The reason that this had been on the consent agenda, just for those listening, and the UNLV stuff had not, is this is consistent with what we've been doing with UNR has had this in their facilities plan for quite a number of years. And as houses become available, there's a number we've approved over the years, kind of all, if you look at that map, all right next to each other in that row. And so it's consistent. And as long as they meet appraisal, we've kind of had many discussions before about it. So that's why I just didn't want to think that we were letting UNR have a consent item where we weren't with UNLV. It's that this has been vetted in the blessing to acquire these properties is more or less been given. So, anybody else have anything to say on this item? Okay, do we have a motion to approve? Motion from Regent Carvalho. A second from, was that Regent Page I heard?
Yes.
All right, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. We will move on to item F, purchase of real property located at 10, oh, that was one we just did, I'm sorry. It is purchase of remnant parcels located at North Virginia Street, Reno, Nevada, from the Regional Transportation Commission of Washoe County, resolution UNR for possible action. Regent Carvalho, would you like to lead off on this one as well?
Thank you, Chair Hayes. I wasn't trying to make a comment on anything nefarious in any way. First, I'd like to say thank you to the UNR Foundation for being amenable to purchasing these parcels. I know that these parcels were part of the master plan, and I appreciate the foundation's support for the university on this. I do want to say that $3.4 million for less than an acre in total is a high price to pay. And I realize that real estate in Nevada, especially northern Nevada, is skyrocketing, and surprisingly so given the economic conditions we're in currently. And I do see that there was an appraisal done on this that justifies that amount. And I realize also that we are purchasing this from the RTC. So I mostly just wanted to say thank you to the foundation for purchasing these parcels on behalf of the university. And I do realize that this is part of the master plan. Thank you.
Anyone from UNR have anything they'd like to add to this item?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Regent Carvalho, I really appreciate your comments. This is a really important purchase for the university and completes the assemblage of properties for the Matthewson University Gateway project. And I think it raised some eyebrows with regard to the purchase price, but I will tell you it's right on the corner of Virginia Street and right at the entrance to the university. So it's a really important piece of property to complete that project, and obviously a valuable one because it sits right on the main street that bisects campus and is immediately next to Interstate 80 and from downtown Reno. Thank you.
Thank you, President Sandoval. Anyone else? Do we have a motion on this item?
So moved.
Second, McMichael.
Motion from Regent Page, second from McMichael. Any discussion? Nope. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed or any opposed? Motion passes. All right, move on to 3E or 2E. Oh, yeah, 3E, 2E, sorry. 2E, the report on campus crime statistics for possible action. You know, we at, have consolidated the police departments, as we're all aware, over the last couple of years, and now have a little more consistency. Some that have been on the board for a while will remember that there certainly were some concerns with the reporting at least one of our campuses in recent years. And now that we've got basically two agencies running it, we should have a lot more consistency. We just wanted to pull the stats and give a chance to the directors, I guess we call them now, not chiefs, to comment on anything that they saw that stood out to them. And then I had a couple of the statistics that kind of jumped out at me that I would like to ask questions on it, and if anybody else would as well. Do either of the directors have anything they'd like to comment on about their crime reports, trends, things that they've seen that are improving, consolidations helping, anything that you see? Kind of, it's kind of our chance annually to take a look at what's going on with public safety on the campuses. So if we want to start with Chief Remwick up north.
Hi, good morning, Regent Hayes, members of the committee. Todd Renwick, for the record, Assistant Vice President, Director for Police Services Northern Command. First of all, let's talk about the consolidation. And I, again, being in the north with Director Garcia, the first to consolidate.
Chief, I hate to cut you off, but I think if you're not speaking right now, could you mute yourself? Someone's moving papers around, and it's. I can't hear the chief. Thanks.
This has, I think, been a very exciting, worthwhile move that we made, you know, starting back in 2016 to consolidate. And I know with the South is going to be the same. So with that aspect, I think the consolidation has just been fantastic, and thoroughly enjoy being able to provide police services to our northern institutions, as well as having the ability to have one Cleary compliance person for the north to manage the institutions, so we are consistent in our reporting, we are accurate in our reporting, and we have that one go-to person to be able to consult as it relates to these matters. So that's my comments on that. As far as crime trends and statistics, we've kind of trended down a little bit, so I don't really see too much concern. I'm obviously, when you trend down, that's always good news. But other than that, I'll wait for any questions you may have.
Sure. Well, as I was noticing some of the trends of, one trend I noticed went down, that's what I would kind of lump together as property crime, burglaries, motor vehicle theft, had substantially fallen. Were there any specific efforts that your department made around those areas?
Well, it's kind of twofolded. One is, you know, get the officers out into the buildings on our campuses and start working with the residents, per se, of those buildings, whether it's faculty, staff, or students, and really work on the education piece about locking doors and keeping valuables secure. So that's been one concerted effort, but you know, we are a very victim-based property because we have so much opportunity here that this is just a constant effort that we have to keep on top of.
One other that jumped out at me is the domestic violence went from 12 to 0. That seems substantial and makes me concerned that maybe there was a reporting error or that things were reclassified in a different way. I mean, to go from 12 to 0 is just very, very significant.
Yeah, so we have actually had reports of domestic violence reported to the university's Title IX office. Those have all taken place off campus. so they're not reportable under this report. We still keep data on that based solely for our victim services coordinator. If you all remember, a few years ago, we were successful in getting a grant to have a victim services coordinator who can service our northern institutions and try to provide additional resources to faculty, staff, and students who become victims of interpersonal violence. So we're still trying to keep tabs on it, but yeah, that is accurate as far as we've had no on-campus domestic violence reports to police.
Great. Thanks, Director Remwick. Anybody else have any questions of Director Remwick?
Mr. Chair, yeah, I do. If that's okay.
Please, Regent Carball.
I do see that there's an increase in drug law violations referred for disciplinary action. Those have increased this year. Can you discuss that and perhaps give us an idea of what the university is doing to maybe curb that?
Chair Hayes to Regent Carvalho. Yeah, thank you. That's the legalization of marijuana. We don't have the ability to criminally take action on that. It's still a violation under the university's policy. So when we respond to those calls, although we don't take any criminal action, we refer it to the Office of Student Conduct, who takes disciplinary action through education and other means that they can.
Thank you.
Chief Garcia, are you with us? I mean, Director, I'm going to keep calling you guys Chief. Director Garcia, are you with us?
I am. Good morning, Chair Hayes and Regents. Adam Garcia, for the record, Vice President, Public Safety Services in Southern Nevada. Good morning. I wanted to briefly touch on the consolidation. Of course, the consolidation itself has led to an increased number in our reporting under crime stats. The reality of it is that we're much more robust in dealing with the issues that are predominant within Southern Nevada. Look at these numbers. We've seen an increased number in particular for rapes as they're defined by Cleary. There has been an increased awareness on the national level as well as the state and local level. The definition of Cleary or the definition of rape and exactly what that means. We've also established a very robust working relationship between police services and Title IX as well as the United Women's Center that was in essence not existence in the past. You may notice that of the rapes that were reported to police services, all of them took place in student housing facilities. And I should also remind you, besides our being more proactive in dealing with crime on the four campuses that we serve in Southern Nevada, in 2019, there was an opening of a public-private partnership dorm on the UNLV campus. That houses 758 people. 50% of the rapes that were reported to University Police in 2019 took place in that facility alone. In order to combat some of these issues, as you may recall, the department received a grant in the amount of $270,000 earlier this year for two police officers whose duties will include residential life liaison. And part of that liaison is going to include residential life safety training. Both of these officers were appointed to their positions November 23rd. So I think in the years to come, you're going to see a significant decrease based on our activity and our outreach within the community, not only at UNLV for residential life, but in Nevada State College. There's another point of interest as well. When we come to you a year from now, I think you're going to see some significant decreases in crime on all of our campuses for Southern Command. For instance, year to date, under rape, we're at about 60% less this year than we were in 2019. And across the board, under Part 1 crimes, you're going to see significant increases. Part of this is COVID. Part of this is the work that the officers in this department are conducting within our service area. There will be some increases in alcohol arrest, drug arrest, and weapons arrest. But again, that's part of being proactive and taking part with, in our community is we work with our folks in Southern Nevada. I did want to point out, you will see that there's a manslaughter statistic in our report. In October of 2019, our officers responded to a hit and run at Maryland Parkway and Harmon Way. It was an unoccupied vehicle which was found. He had struck a pedestrian who was in the crosswalk. Through the actions of both Metro and University Police Services, we were able to make an arrest on that, and the suspect was held accountable for his actions. In May of this year, the suspect was incarcerated, and he's now serving 6 to 15 years in the Nevada Department of Corrections. So it kind of is a follow-up to that. Again, you may recall that we've taken a very aggressive action as it relates to grant funding. To date, since my appointment in February of 2019, we have submitted requests of $2.3 million in various grant funding. The department has received $601,000 in funding, and $25,000 of that funding has been specifically earmarked for traffic safety on or adjacent to the four campuses in the MC office that we serve in Southern Nevada.
Thanks, Dr. Garcia. One of the statistics you brought up that did stand out to me is the increase in rapes, and I wonder if there's any way to know. I mean, it's been one of those crimes that we've always known is underreported compared to the actual prevalence of incidents. Is there any way to know whether that was increased awareness and an ability for people to feel more comfortable reporting, or was it a higher number of incidents, or there's no way to tell what increased the number?
Thank you, Chairman Hayes. The bad news is, like I said, we opened a new, rather large on-campus facility, and it is a private public partnership. So we're working with the management there to address the issues that have come up. But to your point, we've also become much better at allowing folks to be comfortable in coming forward in reporting these. And again, our work and our proactive work with the Women's Center, as well as with Title IX, it speaks volumes for who we were in the past and who we are now, and how comfortable our students are at coming forward and talking to us.
I think I won't be here, but maybe this is something that the new, relatively new security committee needs to follow up on how better, as we're doing more of these public-private partnerships. We've got, you know, one going in at Nevada State, and how we can, whether we need to do some sort of contracting to enforce to require them to cooperate with us, or how we do it so that we have better ability to serve our students and protect our students in those facilities. Again, your property crimes down a lot at UNLV, and this is 2019, so this is not COVID related. And then you talked about there being an increase in liquor and drugs for 2020, but I was noticing how few liquor and drug law violations they were compared to UNR, and I'm just wondering, like, are UNR where all the bad kids go, the drinkers and partiers, and we've got all the very good studious kids here at UNLV, or?
I won't comment on that, Regent Hayes.
Well, you've been at both places, so you've seen both students. I'm guessing it's the fewer on-campus housing units.
That's absolutely correct. We're talking about two very different institutions of higher education, one that has a much higher percentage of folks on campus, the kind of events that they host on at the UNR campus are much different than what happens at UNLV.
And I guess my final one for you, where was, oh, no, I did have, well, one more for you and then one for both of you, and then Regent Page has a question. There's no crime whatsoever at Nevada State College. Nobody's car got broken into. Nobody's laptop got stolen. I mean, this is like the safest place in Nevada other than, you know, unoccupied land out in Esmeralda County.
I did see President Patterson out one day walking the parking lot, so I'm guessing that he augments our law enforcement activity. So thank you, President Patterson.
But the other thing I did have, though, on a more serious note, I'm looking at the arsenals, for lack of a better term coming to mind, of the two campus police departments, and I don't know which one of you would be better to address this, but this is quite the arsenal that we have for, I mean, particularly UNR, where they have, it looks like every officer, from what I can tell, walks around with a Glock handgun, a shotgun, and a rifle. At UNLV, it looks like there are many fewer shotguns, but they all have a handgun, a rifle, and there are three times as many tasers or so at UNLV as there is at UNR. Is there a chance? I mean, we don't hear often, maybe we were not listening, we don't hear often of officers needing to use these. I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't have the necessary means to protect themselves or others if it comes up, but it's a lot of firepower and not a lot of taser power up north. Is this kind of standard issue for officers in university systems around the country? I mean, you know, if something bad were to happen, my goodness, some sort of live shooter, active shooter event, we're going to have the neighboring police departments come in with their SWAT teams and their large arsenals. I'm just wondering, that seems like a lot of firepower up north, and why so few tasers? So I guess the question is for Director Renwick.
Yeah, Regent Hayes, members of the committee. Well, I think one is numbers. The South has more police officers than we have up here, so you're going to see the more numbers in tasers versus ours. Every officer that we have has a taser. They're equipped with a less lethal device, and that is the taser. We do equip our officers with rifles and shotguns. Not everybody carries a shotgun, but they are in their vehicles. It's not something they carry around with them when they're walking around. They do have their sidearm, which is their Glock, and then, like I said, they have their tasers as well. I hope that answers your question.
Since we're definitely seeing a difference in the numbers based on the shotguns, is that standard? Is that a necessity in the north that isn't in the south? There were 11 shotguns in the south.
Correct, and we're in the process of trying to kind of phase out the shotgun. The shotgun's not necessarily a tool that we go to all the time. We actually stopped training it in the academy, and we leave it up to individual agencies if they choose to train their officers with shotguns. So we're phasing those out in the immediate future.
And then I guess for Director Garcia, how many officers do you have? I don't recall offhand.
Chair Hayes, Adam Garcia, Vice President, Public Safety Services. For the record, we have about 80 sworn police officers in Southern Nevada. And I may add, and Director Renwick and I had this discussion last week in which we talked about our department in the South has spun off the use of the shotgun. So all of our shotguns are less lethal, and we moved into what's now the industry standard, which is the patrol rifle. And so we have discontinued the shotgun with the exception of using them as less lethal. As it relates to the tasers, when I arrived here last year, the department, the officers were not equipped with tasers. So we began the process of equipping them with this taser. And there is you either use your fist or your handgun. if you're involved in a situation. And so having a taser gives you that middle ground where you don't have to resort to any kind of deadly force. And so, again, that's the standard throughout the nation, not just in university organizations, but across the board in law enforcement.
So if you've got about 80 officers, though, I'm looking, that means you've got about 40 rifles, where it seems like there's one rifle per officer roughly up north. You got about half a rifle per officer down here. And even on your handguns, it doesn't even seem like it's a one-to-one ratio. Do the officers take their weapons home with them, or do they leave them locked in the facility and check them out each time they start a shift?
No, we're evolving to the point where each employee is provided the tools that are required for them. As it pertains to the patrol rifle, they are specific to the employee. For anybody who is a firearms person, they have to be zeroed in to a specific individual. And so we're in the process of, again, continuing to evolve and moving towards the patrol rifle across the board. Also remember that of those 80, there's 10 or 15 who are part-time who, while they receive the training, they do not receive the tools because they typically only work special events.
Thanks. Regent Page had a question.
Thank you, Chair Hayes. For Director Garcia, we see on the Strip that a lot of the casino properties are putting in metal detectors. I know at one point you had done a grant for some metal detectors. I'm just curious to see, are they in place and where they're in place at?
Well, thank you, Regent Page. Adam Garcia for the record. Yes, we have received the funding for these metal detectors. The main intent is to use them at Thomas and Mack. However, we purchased the ones that can be moved from location to location, so we can use them in Nevada State, College Southern Nevada, DRI, wherever we need to place them. We are currently working with the state of Nevada in their grant department to fulfill the purchase. There's been some hiccups with some of the language in the RFP, but we're working our way through that, and we hope that by the spring, hopefully by then, we'll begin having large events. Those will be in place on our campuses.
Thank you. And then for Director Resnick, any plans up north to have metal detectors as well?
We've had metal detectors for quite some time. We store them at Lawler Event Center. For us, it's a little hard for law enforcement to manage and use the metal detector for Fourth Amendment rights, but we allow our event staff, if there's an event that they choose to use the metal detectors, they can. They're called the double-edged sword with the notion that sometimes they'll slow down admittance into a facility, so it's really up to the promoter and our event staff folks if they want to use the metal detectors.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any questions on item number 2E?
Yes, I have a question.
Yes, Richard McMichael.
I noticed on the inventory list, I didn't see anything in regards to body cams. Do our police on campus wear body cams?
Regent McMichael, Adam Garcia for the record. Yes, every single officer at University Police Services Southern Command is equipped with a body cam. This was not a standard equipment when I arrived here, so we've been slowly evolving to equip every officer. In 2020 is when that took place, so it would not have been reflective in the 2019 report. But as of today, every single officer on patrol in uniform carries a camera, and we have a policy that dictates they must use them when they encounter any public contact.
And Regent Hayes, Todd Remwick, for the record, to Regent McMichael. Same here in the north. Every officer has a body cam. We've had body cams for quite some time now. And it's just part of the uniform, and policy dictates the same.
Thank you. And one more question. It has to do with vehicle thefts. And this is in reference to the electric vehicles, the golf carts. Are each of those golf carts equipped with an individual key that turns it on? Or is it just the standard key that you can pick up at any golf course? You could walk on campus, put it in the vehicle, and drive off?
Regent McMichael, Adam Garcia, for the record. It is a standard key, and the theft of a golf cart is very simple to pull off, is my understanding, and I'm not sure how you do it, but my understanding is it's very simple to do.
And Regent Hayes to Regent McMichael, Todd Renwick from Northern Command. We often find that the operator of the golf cart left the key in the ignition when it got taken. So, like you heard from Director Garcia, it's pretty simple, on at least on the northern campus, after special events or for catering vehicles when they're running things in and out of buildings, they leave the key in it, and it makes it very simple.
Well, is it possible that we could install keypads? So that you're given a number to turn the vehicle on rather than a standard key that basically anybody could walk on campus and use, even if they're leaving keys in the vehicle. I would think a simple keypad and a code to turn the vehicle on would eliminate these electric vehicle thefts.
Regent McMichael, Adam Garcia for the record. We've been working with our risk management as well as with the Vice President for Administration and Finance, and recently passed a policy that requires all golf carts, when they're unattended, to be locked with a chain or some other mechanism. So we're working on mitigating the potential and the theft of these golf carts. My understanding is the use of a keypad would be cost prohibitive, probably cost more than the golf cart itself. So we're looking at other alternatives, and again, the policy that we just implemented requires them to be locked, the key removed, chained, and other methods that would decrease the likelihood of them being stolen.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you both, Director Renwick and Garcia. I think that by most, if not all, accounts, the consolidations have been very successful. The campuses seem to be pleased with the service they're getting. I think the reports are looking better and more accurate. So I think there's a lot of good happening. So appreciate that. I think I brought this up last year, but I'll bring it up again for staff for maybe next year when I won't be here. But I think this is probably a report more appropriate for the Security Committee than the Business, Finance, and Facilities, though it does cover facilities. Maybe something you want to look at. At this point, I will entertain a motion to approve item number 2E.
So moved.
Second.
Motion from Regent Page, second from Regent McMichael. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Item number 3, fiscal year 2020-2021 NCHI State Supported Operating Budget for possible action.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer. Before you today is the fiscal 21 State Operating Budget. This budget does reflect the reductions approved during the special session of $137.8 million dollars. That was a 19.8% reduction to our state funding compared to what was approved during the 2019 legislative session. That reduces our total appropriation in fiscal 21 to $557 million, which reflects the economic challenges that the state is facing, but puts ENCHI just slightly above fiscal 16 levels. The overall state budget is $960 million when you include registration and other fees. And Mr. Chairman, if I might, before I answer any questions, I just want to thank Tammy Johnson, who is my assistant budget director, for all her work in putting this together. It takes a lot of time to put these reports together, and I wanted to thank her publicly.
Thank you, Mr. Klinger. As I recall, and many people probably heard me say this, I believe in 2008, our actual appropriation from the state was $632 million. We finally got back to that a year ago, and now we're going back the other way. So, so I feel for the campuses that are trying to deal with, you know, the Sisyphean, the right word, Sisyphean struggle that you have to go through. We make these great strides. The campuses do amazing things, like the two universities that have achieved Carnegie Tier 1, which we talk about a lot, but it's not just that. It's CSN improving its graduation rate from 9% to 17%. It's the shrinking of the achievement gaps. It's all the things that these campuses have been doing such an incredible job on the last several years with fewer resources. And if you figure out that 630 some odd million, and you put in the inflation calculator, it's almost 800 million. That's what we got in 2008, but in today's dollars, it'd be almost 800 million. And instead, you're having to work with 557. Thank you for all you do and for still continuing to succeed and improve despite the financial struggles that you all face. So with that, I will turn it over to the committee if anybody has any questions or comments on item number 3. Seeing none, I will entertain a yes, Regent Carvalho.
Thank you. Mr. Klinger, on page 7 of item 3B, I just noticed that there's probably a digit missing for the health insurance annual rate for fiscal year 21. I don't know if you could get the corrected number for us.
Mr. Chairman, through you to Regent Carvalho, which section are you looking at specifically? You're looking at the health insurance rate?
Yes, the health insurance.
7, it says $9,000 or 99.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I see. It went in 2020, FY20, from 9,129 to FY21, 9,99. So it's missing a digit, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman, Regent Carvalho, I'm not sure exactly what that rate is, but we can get that corrected on the report before we post it.
Okay.
Yeah, because we don't know if it's $9,199, if it just went up by, you know, $60, or if it's $9,999 and it went up by, you know, $860. So.
Thank you.
Perfect. Okay. Anyone else on the committee? With that, I'll entertain a motion to approve item number 3.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Regent Carvalho, second by Regent Page. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Item number 4, fiscal year 2019-2020 self-supported budget to actual and fiscal year 2020-2021 self-supporting budget for possible action. Mr. Klinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer. So item number 4 is a new version of this report, and it actually reflects the combination of two reports that the committee used to receive. The committee used to receive separately a fiscal 20 budget to actual and a fiscal 21 budget. This combines those into one report. This was based on the sample report we brought back to this committee in March and implemented the feedback from the committee at that point in time. And so this reflects all of the self-supporting activities, including those activities below the 250,000 threshold. That was the feedback from the committee at the time. So for self-supporting activities, there's roughly $591 million in total expenditures across the system. And Mr. Chairman, once again, I'd like to thank my assistant CFO, Rhett Vertrees, for putting this report together, because again, spent a lot of time putting these reports together. So thank you.
Thank you. What did this report used to be? One of them was 500 and something pages, and the other one was almost 200, if I remember right. So to get it down to, what are we still at? 158 pages. But, none of us are, well, very few of us, I'll speak for myself, are financial experts and experts at reading budgets, though I have read several over the last 20 years or so. But this is just so much more readable and usable, and helps us to do our jobs of being able to see what is going on and notice any anomalies or anything that could catch our eye, where before it was just virtually impossible for anyone to have any real oversight. So any questions of the committee on item number four? Okay, entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Motion from Regent Page, second from Regent McMichael. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Item number five, first quarter fiscal year 2020-2021 fiscal exceptions. This is information only. Mr. Klinger.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer. So item 5A is the first quarter fiscal exceptions report. We do have a new report, which we'd like to preview with you. That's under item number 7 as information. I wanted to get some feedback from you on that. But in the meantime, this is the standard report that the committee sees every quarter. A lot of the typical items on this, the UNR, ASU, and Wolf Shop reported a deficit of almost $2.5 million. UNR Intercollegiate Athletics reported a deficit of $6.6 million. The University of Nevada, Las Vegas School of Medicine continues to report a deficit of $8.3 million. This is an increase of $2.2 million over the previous quarter. As well as the Thomas and Mack Center is reporting a cash deficit of $1.2 million. And then finally, CSN Dental Faculty Practice reporting a deficit of $786,000.
Thank you, Mr. Klinger. I'll start this out, I guess. Is there anybody from UNLV? I think Mr. Bach was going to be attending, or if there's someone from the med school. We keep hearing that the reason that UNLV School of Medicine appears on this report is the delay in reimbursement. But the delay, the amount increased by $2.2 million. There has to be something more going on here than a simple delay in reimbursement for services provided. Is there some more explanation that can be provided to us?
For the record, this is Jean Bach from UNLV. Thank you, Trevor Hayes, for the question. As far as the GME, on the medical side, we got the GME, which is always billed in arrears, and the faculty practice plan, which is also, billed in arrears, but that has increased. Dr. Gardner is available on the phone. I know that they've been making active plans and increasing their cash cash flow. Do you want to address that in more detail, Dr. Gardner?
I'd be happy to.
Dr. Conn, okay.
Dr. Conn, Michael Gardner,
Michael Gardner, CEO of UNLV Medicine. I'll discuss the practice plan, and then Dean Conn may want to discuss the issues we've had with GME reimbursement. As far as the practice plan, we certainly did see a decrease in cash flow with COVID. Our insurance companies, including Medicaid, were slower to pay us over the summer. That's gotten better. As of today, the deficit is $2.5 million. It is our plan to get that deficit down to zero by the end of this fiscal year. So that's the difference of we've, since this report was turned in, we've decreased that deficit by almost a little over $900,000. So our goal is to get that down to zero by the end of the fiscal year, and we have a glide path to do that. We are seeing, we have just gotten back to where our clinic visits are about 90% of where they were before COVID, 95%. We still have not gotten 100% back. What's interesting for us is that, and we'll discuss this in more detail tomorrow at the Health Sciences Committee, 60% of our revenue comes from inpatient revenue, not outpatient. And as it's counterintuitive, that actually our inpatient revenue has gone down, because while UNLV pulmonologists do all the ICU care at UMC, a lot of the other cases that we've seen a decrease in other inpatient admissions, somewhat because of COVID, we've not been able to do what I call indicated but not urgent surgical procedures and other things that
we put on.
Mark, I can hear you. And so that's that actually has hurt our inpatient revenue because of that. But we're starting to see us come out of that. And again, we fully intend on being to a zero balance by the end of this fiscal year. Happy to answer any questions about the UNLV medicine deficit.
Well, let's hear from Dean Conn first, and then if anybody has any questions, we'll take on the point. Dean Conn, did you have, it sounded like you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah, just I'm going to comment on the GME accounts for the record. Mark Conn, Dean, School of Medicine, UNLV. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the issue with the GME accounts is that UMC is typically a month or two behind in their transfer payments from CMS for GME, but they're actually became 4 months behind. We're continuing to work with them to get them out of arrears, but this is money that is due us. So CMS, as you probably know, pays the hospital, and then that's a pass-through that comes to us to pay resident and fellow salaries. So this is just really represents a delayed payment.
Chair Hayes, if I could add to that, sure. I think it's important to understand that UMC, for the last, ever since Medicaid expansion, that President Sandoval thankfully shepherded as governor, ever since Medicaid expansion, UMC has actually been in the black until this year. UMC is looking at in their public discussions at their board meetings, up to a $100 million deficit for this year. They've had some cash flow issues. And so I think they're starting, it's my understanding, talking to their finance people, that they're starting to come out of that. We're hopeful that they're going to catch back up. But over the summer, they were in a difficult financial straits, and frankly, they were extending payment on certain things while they made sure they made payroll.
Wow, if I recall, I believe pre-Medicaid expansion, they were looking at like an $86 million hole, and now it's $100 million with Medicaid expansion. That's going to be tough for them. Okay. Anybody else have any questions while we've got the med school and UNLV folks teed up? Not seeing any. Thank you. I'd like to talk about the CSN Dental Faculty Practice Plan. Do we have Dr. Saragosa or someone else from CSN nearby? Some of this, I'm just going to touch on it right now because more of it's going to come up in our audit committee next, where we see that there was almost $400,000 in accounts receivable that were not submitted in time and have to be written off when we've got a deficit of, you know, $800 million here. A negative cash balance, $800,000, half of that could have been wiped out by simply
billing on time, and we keep seeing again and again, oh, we need to get someone in the right position. And apparently, again, they have hired someone in the role to do the billing. But it's frustrating that, is there anybody from CSN here? Am I just talking to the wind? Yeah.
No, Chair Hayes, this is Sonia Pearson, Campus Provost for the Crossing Campus.
Perfect. Okay, so from what I understand is most dental hygiene programs around the country have their hands-on work is done under the tutelage of a dentist out in the community. And we have this Cadillac of systems that's been described to me that we actually have a facility where they go and they get direct one-on-one teaching, and we can make sure that they're doing, that they're learning everything, and we're not kind of outsourcing to a dentist who we have no quality control over. And it's this great system that people are so proud and happy of, and my own dentist tells me what a wonderful program it is, and he's hired many people through it. But it's losing so much money, we're going to lose this. Yet I see in the audit committee report that half of this deficit could have been taken care of by simply sending out the bills for work done on time. What is going on with this practice plan, and how can it be saved? Because at this rate, we will have no practice plan, and this board's going to get blamed for it. And so we as a board need to be on top of this and make sure that we are making sure you're doing what you need to be doing, because ultimately people are going to say that we screwed something up, and maybe we did, because this has been going on for far too long.
So thank you, Chair Hayes, and allow me opportunity to provide some further context into your important comments and observations. I will quickly remind the committee that what you're seeing in front of you is our corrective action plan to identify why those deficits existed and why those uncollectible accounts did rest on the books for quite some time. With the recent November report, you'll see that those write-offs have been removed from the books, actually. That was sitting on our accounts, as you noted, for quite some time. In addition to that, we have moved forward with a financial plan that has significantly reduced the amount of deficits monthly at the DFP. So when I reported out in September, what I reported out is that we were trending in the right direction. Our overall production rates now exceed the amount of expenditures. Our overall patient base has actually increased. We have 100 new patients in just 2 months. Our collection rate, we wanted to maintain 85%, where historically it was on around 30 to 40%. We're at 85% at this point in time. Our aging accounts were at an average of 90 to 120 days. The DFP today is averaging 30 to 60 days. We're working with some insurance companies to make sure that they are more timely in getting us the payments within the months that the patients are actually receiving those services. We also did resolve, as you noted, our staffing issues. But I'm a firm believer, as I noted to the committee before, we can't build a model that says let's spend money to make money. So looking at external partnerships is one of the key areas that we are continuing to move forward on with UNLV. Also bringing on board a staffing agency, so as people take personal leave or we have dentists at leave, now our insurance providers are in support to allow us to build a on-call dentist provider list where we can pre-qualify them. So if a dentist leaves, we can immediately put them back in production without having to wait 30 days. That was a huge overtaking. The other thing that we're looking at is the staffing agency for some of our critical areas like the DAs and the dental hygiene areas. We do have a staffing agency on plan right now to help us with that. The other thing was to keep our expenses within reason. Historically, there was a time where our expenses went from $65,000 to $80,000 and sometimes $90,000. You'll see in the recent November report that has actually stabilized, where we're averaging around $65,000. So of the 7 to 10 financial areas where we were noted to be deficient with our audit report, we have made some significant progress in those areas. So we're trending in the way that you all have challenged us to do. I am confident that this plan is a good one that we have. We're going to continue to move in that direction. And a major overhaul was looking at those 10 years of debt that was on the books and getting that resolved. So I offer that information as just continue evidence of our commitment to move this program so it is sustainable. The last thing I did want to note for the committee, Chair Hayes, is the following. We can pursue bringing on dentists to increase production. The major area that we need to make sure we're scaling on is the collections. The billings are pretty good at this point, but it is a matter of the collections. 70% of our patients are insured through insurance agencies. So there's a heavy reliance on us to get those payments in within a reasonable time. And that's where we feel like UNLV and our partnership with them, but also our internal collaboration with our business management, business administration students will help us to put more people on that and not actually add more expenses or administrative costs to the DFP. So those are the plans that we have in place, and I hope that addressed some of the core areas that you've noted.
Thank you. Regent Page had a question.
Yes, thanks, Chair Hayes. In regards to UNLV, can you just a Reader's Digest version of that partnership and what you're doing with them, and is there more that you can do?
Yes, sir, Regent Hayes, and also for the committee. What I'm actually looking at with the DFP leadership right now, again, is to try to focus on the area where we need to gain the greatest traction, and that's bringing in revenue. The DFP is not in a position to put a lot of staffing around this particular area, but that is the area that's going to help us to close gaps. So working with UNLV, and we have not solidified the partnership yet. UNLV was going through some financial reviews and audits themselves, so we're ready to resume that discussion with them and have a framework for how they can assist us with collection activities with our insurance providers. So I hope that addresses your questions.
Sure. And then one follow-up question. You said that reimbursement went from 30% to 85%. That 85%
yes.
would compare as a industry norm. What would normal collections be?
Thank you very much for asking that question. Again, Sonia Pearson, for the record. So the industry standard is 85%, but I will be candid with you in my recent discussion with the DFP leadership. Another aggressive strategy that we need to have moving into the next quarter is to move beyond the industry standards. That's looking at our total collection rates as well as within the month, how much money we're collecting from patients we see for that month. So what I have proposed to the DFP is that we move from an 85% to a 90% rate of collection for our accounts. That in and of itself would help us to aggressively and quickly begin to close the financial gaps as well. But right now, we are actually performing at the industry standard, which is 85%.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That is great news, because there's no worse feeling than being lying helplessly on my back with another human being with sharp objects and drills in my mouth telling me that I better not let the dental dental hygiene practice fail. So I appreciate that, and hopefully it keeps trending in the right direction. The final thing I'll comment on are athletics that was mentioned in the report. It's going to get ugly. I think we all recognize it's going to get ugly. We are not going to uglier. Yeah, we are not getting any revenue through the gates. We're not selling concessions. We're not getting our guarantee games that UNLV and UNR often get a million plus for. TV could be threatened if we don't produce enough games for our TV contracts. So it makes sense that it's on the list, and it will continue to be on the list for probably the next couple of years, unfortunately. But anybody else have anything about the fiscal exceptions report they'd like to discuss? It is information only.
Go ahead.
Regent Carballo.
I'll come behind you.
Thank you. Well, I wanted to make a comment and then ask for a little bit of clarification really quick. First of all, I do realize that this report is for the quarter ending September 30th. So we realize that things change and the amounts on this report will fluctuate based on that. And I do want to say to UNR that it is it pleases me to not see the Fire Science Academy on there. So congratulations on that feat, because it in previous meetings we wondered if that would ever come off. So congratulations to you on that. I was hoping that Mr. Redding, if you could share with the committee the if it's okay with Chair Hayes, of course, if Mr. Redding could share with the committee what the plan is for the balance with the wolf shop.
Appreciate it, and happy to. For the record, Vic Redding, Vice President, Administration and Finance, University of Nevada, Reno. The Wolf Shop transitioned from a student-run organization to Barnes & Noble in July through a competitive bid. We were one of the last student-run bookstores in the country, and the business model had certainly changed. And at the time of that transition, had accumulated a debt a little over almost $2.4 million. As we handed off the operation to Barnes & Noble, the final tally of that deficit is the $2.48 million reflected in fiscal exceptions. And absolutely correct, this is as of September 30th. As the quarter evolves, the bookstore proceeds from the sell-off of the remaining inventory, as well as proceeds from that contract, will be used to pay down this balance. We will be paying it down for $500,000 this quarter. So when you see the 12/31 numbers in March, it should be down by another $500,000. And then the plan is for the two remaining quarters this fiscal year, an additional $450,000 to get that down to the 1.5 range. There is a multi-year plan in place with student government to chip away at this debt and have it fully serviced by fiscal 24-25, and we are on track for that.
Thank you.
Mr. Carvalho, do you have any further?
That was it. Thank you.
Mr. Page.
Thank you, Chair Hayes. In regards to athletics, in the best of times, athletics is a big hole, a negative hole. And with COVID and moving forward, I'd just be curious for both UNR and UNLV plans for dealing with it, because I think it's going to get a lot worse.
President Whitfield, I think I saw you joined in. You want to lead us off on your plans for the financial difficulties that athletics are facing?
Yes, and not knowing exactly what you might have seen from that report, one of the things that you'll note is that we have been relying quite heavily on some supplemental funds that we had, but that is going to soon end. And we are going to be in a very, very difficult situation. We're hoping through the measures that we've taken in terms of reducing the hours of our workforce, that will give us a little bit of cover for a little bit longer. It is going to be difficult. We haven't got a specific plan for how to handle all of it, because we don't know how long it will be. What is interesting is that a lot of places actually want to come to UNLV to hold some of their spring basketball, for example, because they're in places where they can't actually hold their events. That's not going to completely, bring us back to tide, but I think as Regent Page accurately said, it always costs to do athletics, and we've got to just try to balance out what those costs and what some of the opportunities are, given we're in a state that's doing a little better than some of the other states.
Thank you.
President Sandoval.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Regent Page. Similar situation for UNR, and pre-COVID, we were at the brink of breaking even, and obviously because of COVID and the cancellation of the NCAA tournament and the fact that we can't have fans. And as you described, Mr. Chairman, the benefit of any of the proceeds associated with ticket sales and concessions and other items and reduced TV revenue, it is his cost, and it, you know, is going to be very expensive, and we've been supplementing that. We have, I've met extensively with the athletic director, I'm going to refer to Mr. Redding too, and we've embedded some financial people within the athletic department to ensure that that all the expenses are watched extremely closely. I know our basketball team is going to be busing to every possible game that they can, those games that they're going to be playing in the Bay Area, and we're watching every penny, and are going to be really firm in that regard. Mr. Redding, anything you wanted to add?
No, sir. I think you covered it. So many unknowns as we move through the rest of the fiscal year. I'm sorry for the record, Vic Redding. Like you mentioned, if you'd have asked this question March 15th, we would have said we were in striking distance of breaking even in fiscal 20, and then March Madness was canceled in the conference distribution, and that's probably the single largest unknown that we have right now is what the conference distributions will be and what type of impact that'll have on our budget, but certainly that's in the seven figures. As the president mentioned, the athletics director and I are joined at the hip financially, and in fact, the finance function is a direct report to both myself and the AD, so that we can move this in real time and as the president mentioned, watch every revenue and expenditure line closely.
Thank you.
Okay. There are no other questions on the fiscal exceptions report. We'll move on to item number six, first quarter fiscal year 2020-2021, budget transfers, state-supported or self-supporting operating budgets. It's for information only, and the information is that there were no transfers between functional areas greater than 500,000 during the first quarter of the fiscal year, so we have no report to give. We'll move on to item number seven, also for information only, review of revised fiscal exceptions report. We'll have Mr. Klinger lead that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer. Before I jump into item seven, I wanted to just go back briefly and put on the record the question that Regent Carvalho had on item number three, which was page seven, the health insurance rate. That fiscal 21 annual insurance rate should be $9,399.60. So I had that number, so I thought it would be important just to put that on the record, Mr. Chairman. On to item seven, revised fiscal exceptions report. Mr. Chairman, this is something that you and the committee have asked us to bring forward some better reports, more streamlined reports, and you're seeing some of that on this agenda. This is a first take at a revised fiscal exceptions report. It's very similar to the old report, but we do think there are some key elements included in this report that are not in the previous report that will be helpful to the committee. And Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd like to turn it over to my assistant CFO, Rhett Vertrees, who put this together.
Go ahead, Rhett.
Good morning. Rhett Vertrees for the record. So as you can see, I've provided an example of the current report and an example of what we're proposing as a new report here. So let me share my screen real quick so I can go through this.
But just so you know, we've got 23 minutes and several more items because the group ahead of us went 25 minutes long.
Okay. Let me just touch on the major difference. And I'm not sure if you can see my screen or not there. But the major difference is that we basically are doing a comparison of the projecting ending cash balance that is done as part of the budget preparation at the beginning of the year for that program and comparing it to where they are and their current cash balance. So you can see on the in the top report on the very far column, the cash balance variance. That variance, that gives you the variance. So this is December 31st, 2019 for the faculty practice plan, for UNLV faculty practice plan and CSM dental practice plan there. You can see as of December 31st of last year, they actually had a large improvement of about $2 million over what they had projected at the end of the year. So it just kind of gives you an idea of their operations and how they're operating. You can also see that I included a new column called operating performance because I wanted to give you an idea. Are they actually doing better because of their operating, or are they doing better because maybe transfers into the university, transfers into those departments from someplace else in the university? Now, I have to give you a caveat about transfers in. I mean, in my years of working at the, in the university, I've seen organizations and programs that will actually accumulate revenues in one account and then distribute them to other accounts using transfers instead of a revenue-to-revenue transfer. They use a transfer in category, which technically they should probably use a transfer-to-transfer. So I don't know the details of these transfers, but that certainly could be support from the university, or it could be transfers of actual revenues that were just in another account, and I don't know. But yeah, those are the major differences of this report, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thanks, Rhett. Anybody have any questions on this? Thumbs up, thumbs down, we like the new report. I'm not going to have to deal with it. It's you guys. So, Vice Chair Carvalho, you got any
I think that this is a good report. I do like it. I would like to get a little bit more information, but I can do that offline.
Perfect. All right. In the name of time, we're going to move forward unless anybody else has anything they need to do right now. I want to skip ahead and bring up item number 12 next before we get into the UNLV section of the agenda. So is Ms. Seibert available? I know you'd prepared a very nice PowerPoint deck, but in the name of time, unfortunately, can I ask you to give us kind of the 3 to 5 minute version?
Regent Hayes, may I say this is Joyce Helens?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, thank you. This is Joyce Helens for the record. I just wanted to briefly say the amended grant construction agreement before you is really the culmination of that incredible journey over the past 3 years. And it's important to say the success of this project is really because of the collaboration among so many stakeholders. And I want to thank the Pennington Foundation, who really believed in this project throughout those years and was the primary funder, but also wanted to thank the Regents for their support. And thank you, Regent Page, as well as Humboldt General Hospital, Nevada Gold Mines, and our foundation, Great Basin College, as well as UNR, Core Construction, and Van Wert Bugatti. But I do want to really thank Vice President Sonia Seibert, because she ushered us with all of those stakeholders to this point. So go ahead, Vice President Seibert.
Thank you. Good morning. And for the record, Sonia Seibert, Vice President for Business Affairs. In the interest of time, we will not be going through the PowerPoint presentation. You have that in your agenda materials. In the midst of a pandemic, budget reductions and furloughs, we are excited to bring this project forward for approval. This project started in 2017 with a proposal submitted to the Pennington Foundation for support of construction of a new 13,500 square foot building in Winnemucca for health sciences and technology. Along this process, we took pauses or went at turtle speed as we did due diligence in reassessing community and student needs, enrollment trends and projections, cash flows, cost estimates, timelines, and funding gaps. This project aligns with three of NCHE's strategic goals: access, success, and workforce. Academic programs that will be in the new building are health sciences, including nursing, EMS, and paramedic, and electrical technology. All of these are high demand occupations that provide jobs upon completion for all of our graduates. During the GMP process, CORE received great interest from trade subcontractors for this rural project. We have completed the GMP process and the construction services agreement with CORE for $7,999,995. The GMP is approximately $78,000 lower than the estimate for this part of the total project. The next step in this project will be to submit plans to State Public Works for their review next week. We have received generous support from the William N. Pennington Foundation, providing a total of $8.3 million toward this project. In October 2020, the GBC Student Government Association voted to approve $100,000 toward furnishings in the new building, and we will be working with them during the spring semester to review designs and colors. Another key component in the success of this project over the last 6 months is the collaboration with UNR. GBC does not have staff who have expertise in construction project management, so we entered into an additional attachment to our current MOU for shared services for project management. In addition to gaining the needed expertise for this project, there are cost savings to GBC when compared to the price that State Public Works would be charging for project management services. The existing modular that houses the electrical program will need to be moved prior to the start of construction. We are currently reviewing options for space and will move classes and lab equipment to the new space over the semester break in order to not impact students during the course of spring classes. This project has been a great collaboration between all parties. In order to meet the contingencies of the amended construction grant agreement from Pennington, we developed a revised and expedited schedule. We have successfully worked together to meet all milestones in the expedited schedule on time and look forward to groundbreaking in 2021 and project completion in 2022. At this time, Great Basin College requests approval of the capital project and approval for the amended construction grant agreement with the William N. Pennington Foundation for $8.3 million. In addition, we'd also request approval for the construction services agreement with CORE for $7,999,995. Due to the timing of the GMP process under the expedited schedule, the contract included in your agenda materials is the final document other than including the cost of $7,999,995. In closing, many thanks to the Pennington Foundation and the Board of Regents for supporting Great Basin College's service to rural and frontier Nevada and building healthy communities through education and a well-trained workforce. Thank you, and at this time, if anyone has any questions, we'd be happy to address those.
Thank you so much, Vice President Seibert, and I hate to rush you and not let you do your deck, but as I said, the committee before went long, but I did want to move you up in the agenda so we weren't completely rushed, because this is such a great project and shows Great Basin's commitment to serving its very large geographic footprint throughout the state. I'm not sure there's a college in the country that has a larger number of square miles that they service, and that the hard work that went into this to find the funding for this project. So I wanted to make sure this was front and center and not rushed through. Also wanted to thank, from what I understand, this project almost failed a couple of times. As you said, sometimes quick, sometimes at a snail's pace, I believe you said. And Regent Page actually was contacted by the Pennington Foundation to help keep this project going along. So I wanted to give a thanks to Regent Page for helping to keep this project alive and the relationship he built with the Pennington Foundation that allowed this to continue. And with that, I believe Regent Page had a question. So, Regent Page?
Thank you, Chair Hayes. I actually had a comment. I wanted to thank the Pennington Foundation because they gave the initial money with GBC having to raise $2 million, and GBC was able to get up to $1.5 million. They came back and put another $500,000 in for it. And at any time, because we did not meet the timeline that was initially out there, it could have taken the money back. And so, want to thank them. Also want to thank CORE Construction, who worked with GBC and really did a a great job coming in with the new price. And then, and I think it was noted, but UNR helped here with their construction management. So it was a good team effort. And I think two other people that need to be thanked is the Chancellor, Rose, who got involved and helped us with this, and Joe Reynolds and actually Mike Whitson. So a good team effort, but I think we wound up in a really good spot. But I don't think we could thank Pennington enough, because without them, you know, this would not happen, and they could have pulled the money very, very easily. So thanks.
I agree. I think I've mentioned this before, and I will again, that Pennington does so much for our Northern Nevada institutions that we should really do something special as a board to thank them for all the support that they give to the institutions. Anybody else on the committee have any comments, questions? Not seeing any, I will entertain a motion to approve this item with the addition of, what was the number, Vice President Seibert? 7,900,000. What was it again?
7 million, for the record, Sonia Seibert, Vice President for Business Affairs, 7,999,995.
So moved.
With, there we go. Do we have a second?
Second.
Oops, and just to be clear, I think when I skipped ahead, this is item number 12, Health Sciences and Technology Building, Winnemucca, Nevada, GBC, for possible action. We have a motion to approve with the amendment of the price of $7,999,995. Motion by Regent Page, second by Regent Carballo. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Congratulations, Great Basin College, and thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We are back to item number 8, UNLV. Dr. Whitfield, I guess it's good we went long, because I understand you had another meeting you had to step away for, and you're now back with us. We have 4 items for UNLV and 11 minutes to get through it. I'm going to hope that Dr. Carter will allow me, since I've never gone over my allotted time in 4 years as chair of this committee, to go a little over, because we started 25 minutes late. But let's do remember that we've got a whole other committee that needs to get in before the board starts at 1 o'clock. So, do you have any short introduction you'd like to give on item number 8, amendment to 2019A revenue bond resolution to repurpose the revenue bond proceeds for the UNLV Tropicana parking structure phase 2 project resolution to UNLV for possible action?
Thank you, Chairman Hayes. Keith Whitfield for the record. Very briefly, this item, UNLV is requesting approval of a resolution to repurpose the revenue bonds issued for the engineering building back in October, November timeframe of 2019, and direct those funds to finance the construction of phase 2 of the Tropicana parking structure project. What I'll do is ask Gene Vock to step in and just highlight some of the more important points, and then maybe we can get to any questions that arise from the discussion. Gene?
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, President Whitfield and Chair Hayes. Just real briefly, I think you're all aware that in July 2020, the legislature canceled the authorization to fund phase 1 of the engineering building. As a result, the proceeds that were intended for that project could not be utilized. And so, in essence, we are making a mortgage payment without a building. UNLV had planned to pursue new financing in 2020 for the Tropicana Parking Garage Phase 2. However, given that we're already paying debt service on bonds issued for the engineering building, we believe it's financially prudent to utilize those proceeds for the parking garage rather than issue additional bonds while the 2019 bonds are outstanding. We consulted with NSHE's bond council, and we now present for your approval the amendment to the bond resolution, which would address the change in purpose for the bonds. Our bond council is available if there are questions regarding the resolution. Based in a nutshell, by repurposing the financing, the debt service will be paid from parking revenue rather than capital improvement fees as was originally planned. We are optimistic that we may be able to fund the engineering bond or fund the engineering building in the next session, but since that is unknown, we felt it's prudent to use these funds for this purpose.
Thank you, Ms. Vock. Any questions of the committee?
Chair Hayes?
Yes, Rita Page.
Just a comment. I think it's really important in conversations with the legislature going forward that this could have been a disaster taking, you know, the $20 million is a big hit. But as Gene said, you're paying a mortgage on a building that you don't have. And, you know, fortunately, it could be repurposed on the parking garage, but that might not always be the case. And so I think the board going forward needs to be very careful before they bond anything. And, you know, this, I don't think it's ever happened before where money's been taken back like this. Just a word of caution, and that's it.
Anyone else on the committee? So I have a couple of questions. So the fee increase will be $5 per month for fall of next year and $3 per month starting the fall of 2022. When did we start selling parking passes by the month? Isn't it a semester to semester?
We do, but that is the monthly impact. Typically, we do sell the parking passes by the semester or the academic year. There are monthly passes available, but typically people would buy that on a semester or academic year basis. But it translates to $5 a month.
So we usually start, say, mid-August and end mid-December. So is that 4 months, or is August, even though it's a partial month, counted as a full month, they're getting a $5 increase? And even though December is a partial month, that's a $5 increase. And so really, it's more than $5 a month.
I can confirm the details with our parking, but it's approximately $5 a month impact. We typically sell semester or annual passes.
Or is it $60 a year and it's being called $5 a month, even though the students would really only use it for 7 or 8? So it just is really weirdly worded to be a per month when that's not how we really sell most of those. So I'd really like to, before we vote on this in the next couple minutes, if someone could get in touch with you and let us know how that's actually done. The other question I have is, Regent Page is 100% right on in that this money was taken and you're paying, like, as you said, the mortgage on a building you don't have. My question is, this the building we need to replace it with? Had a massive parking over the last several years. I mean, going back to Greenspun Hall, which is a phenomenal building. Thank you very much to the family that helped to make that possible. But that used to be a student parking area. Then just south of that, behind the in and out, we took out for the RJC for the bus. We've lost a ton of parking along the parkway. I'm looking at the map here. There may not be a further spot on the main campus from where the students actually go than where you're proposing to build a second parking garage, other than the dorms are right there. But I mean, if you're a student trying to go anywhere from, you know, the hospitality building all the way up to the science and STEM in the campus, isn't there a spot that would be better to serve the students than this at the edge of campus?
Yes, I can address that. We have actually engaged with our consultants on a parking master plan, and this was determined to be the next highest demand area. The one following that would be located further up north on campus. But you're right, it is. It's adjacent to the residence halls, to the student rec center, and to the corridor that moves traffic from that area of campus to center of campus. So it is a high demand area, and you're right, we have lost some parking. We're also anticipating that we will lose more parking when the Tropicana and University Center Drive renovation moves forward. You know, what was formerly the elevated expressway is now going to be a divergent diamond exchange. And so this is actually a very high demand area. It's also high demand for athletics activities. Yeah. So as far as I do have an answer on the monthly amount as well.
Oh, that'd be great. Thanks.
Yeah. So it is monthly. We use monthly, whether it's semester or annual. So the monthly, you know, so it averages out to $5 a month, whether you purchase the semester pass or the academic term pass. So it's for those.
So my question was, it's August, middle of August to middle of December, 4 months, or is that 5 months?
Yes, I've asked for a little bit more clarification on that. So I believe it's the 4.5 months. So I'm getting the specific rate right now.
Okay. All right. Any other questions from the committee? I'm not seeing any. I wonder if I should. I'll entertain a motion if someone wants to make a motion on this. Otherwise, I can move it back to the end of the agenda until we get an answer. But I will accept it. I just don't think it's very clear and transparent to the students of what they would be paying in addition on their parking when it's worded in a way that isn't how they pay for their parking. But does anyone want to make a motion to approve this? Item number 8.
I'll make a motion to approve.
I have a motion from Regent McDonald. We have a second. McMichael. Second from Regent Carvalho. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we'll move forward. Motion passed. Sorry. Item number 9. Purchase of real property located at 1420 East Harmon Avenue, Las Vegas, Nevada, UNLV for possible action. President Whitfield.
Motion for approval.
I have a motion to approve. We have a second from Regent McMichael. Motion from Regent Page. President Whitfield, do you have?
We're requesting the approval for a purchase of property at 1420 East Harmon Avenue. The interest in this particular piece is due to its strategic location. The property would provide us some short-term opportunities, possibly for campus parking, and in the long term, it would be incorporated into the work that we have that's outlined in our master plan. And so it's to be able to connect that with some other properties that we have, so that as we go forward, we would be able to have the capacity to build out and to do some work on the other side of Maryland Parkway.
Any discussion? All in favor?
I do have a question really quick.
Sorry, wait. Regent Carvalho, please.
I'm sorry about that. President Whitfield, would it be possible for you to elaborate on where the funds will come from for the purchase of this property?
Certainly, but actually let me defer that to CFO Vock for clarity on where those funds actually come from and the restrictions that we have on the use of those funds.
Thank you, President Whitfield and Regent Carvalho and Regent Hayes. The funding sources are a real estate acquisition account, which has $1.2 million in it. In July of 2018, the board approved the allocation of some funds into a real estate acquisition account because we had identified some strategic opportunities. There, we also have a balance in a land acquisition reserve account, which was funded through some small sales of property. For example, over the years, we sold some properties. The most recent one was the city of Las Vegas paid UNLV some funds to do the medical district improvements, and we generated, I believe, around $351,000 from that. We sold a couple small homes that we owned on Sahara, which generated $450,000, and during Project Neon, the state paid UNLV for $744,000. So these are the type of funds that we put in for back and forth purchases. We get some purchases when there's an easement or so forth, and then sometimes we use the funds to purchase. So these are funds that are established to fund these strategic opportunities. They do not reduce any funding available to support students or university operations.
Thank you for that clarification.
Do we have a motion and we have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Item number 10, third amendment to the Mobile Light Investments 3 LLC Master Wireless Network Agreement and Ground Lease for UNLV. Dr. Whitfield.
Thank you, Chairman Hayes. Keith Whitfield for the record. With this agenda item, UNLV is requesting approval of the third amendment to the Master Wireless Network Agreement and ground lease with Mobile Light Investments. As you may recall, the board approved the second amendment to the lease at its June meeting, which allowed Mobile Light to lease fiber from UNLV. Mobile Light now desires to upgrade the distributed antenna system on the Maryland campus to 5G service and expand connectivity to additional buildings. However, carriers are hesitant to invest without an increase in the term of the lease. Therefore, we request approval of a third amendment, which will increase the number of automatic 5-year renewals from 1 to 4 if the DAS in Thomas and Mack is upgraded to 5G within 2 years of execution of this amendment.
It's my question is I would think you came into an agreement with Mobileye because they're experts in the field. Would they not have the knowledge of the industry standards of how long leases normally are so that we could have made this amendment back in the spring when we changed it? It seems like they're a little caught off guard. It makes me wonder if they're actually the right partner for us if they don't know how the industry works. Like, they don't even know what the industry expects to have the 5-year terms. It's very concerning.
Let me ask Gene Vock to provide some additional detail on that from that previous negotiation that went on.
Thank you, President Whitfield and Regent Hayes. I think that during the June meeting, you know, that we needed to move forward with that decision at that time so they could make they could lease fiber for UNLV from UNLV so they could expand their installation. This is really just taking their investment to the next level, and so it required a separate amendment. We didn't have all the information available at the June meeting, but because they're ready to really further their investment by upgrading the service, and it's a benefit to UNLV because it provides better service to us and to our campus community. So I just think it was the next logical step. First, they had to get the authorization to lease the fiber, and then this is the follow-up.
Regent Page, you had a question?
Yes, thank you, Chair Hayes. President Whitfield, you're talking about adding additional buildings. How many buildings are currently covered, and you know what buildings will be added to this?
Gene, do you have those details about how many additional buildings are going to be added in addition to TMC?
President Whitfield, Regent Page, and Regent Hayes. Right now, 7 buildings are currently covered by this wireless network. And over time, more will be added. The specific details will evolve over the years as the opportunities are evaluated and expanded. Now, we will note that this agreement generates revenue for UNLV and has generated $875,000 to date, which we use then to fund into our telecom services. So this is the wireless network component, and it provides funding to us that as a result of the revenue that they generate, which that we then reinvest into the campus telecommunications model.
Thank you.
Any other questions of the committee? Anybody want to make a motion?
So moved.
Second. I'll second.
Motion by Regent Page, second by Regent Carvalho. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Great. We'll move on to item number 11, rent abatement letter agreement between UNLV and Clear Channel Outdoor. UNLV for possible action. Dr. Whitfield.
Thank you, Chairman Hayes. Keith Whitfield for the record. With this agenda item, UNLV is requesting approval of the letter of agreement between UNLV and Clear Channel Outdoor. Provide Clear Channel with rent abatement for a 3-month period. Clear Channel currently leases 2 billboards on the Tropicana 42-acre site. Clear Channel has requested a 50% rent abatement for the period of June 1, 2020 through August 31, 2020 due to ongoing revenue losses from COVID-19 and the current economic conditions. This amount of abatement for this three-month period would equate to $34,171.74, and it would be applied as a credit to offset base rent for the upcoming December 21, 2020 to December 20, 2021 payment period. In exchange for abatement, Clear Channel would provide UNLV with digital advertising space valued in the amount of the abatement on its billboards in the Las Vegas market. And then I guess I would ask Jean, is there any other details to add to that summary?
For the record, Jean Bach with UNLV. Thank you, President Whitfield and Regent Hayes. Just the only thing that I would add to that is that, you know, we worked with UNLV and NC Council, and we could have offered this rent abatement under the terms of the current lease, but it would have been considered a default. And Clear Channel indicated that their preference would be that the abatement be not be considered a default, but a modification to the lease terms. And to, you know, in respect for our relationship, we agreed to pursue this, but that does require bringing this forward to the board.
Anybody on the committee have any questions?
I do. Chair Hayes, just a real quick question on the royalty payments, the estimated royalty payments, year 1 through 10. Based on the number I saw in there, what have they been close to those estimates?
From Clear Channel, you're talking about?
Yeah, so it's column C. It shows the 10 years, A, B, and C, and column C is estimated royalty payment starting at $26,988 going up to $103,507. But then I saw like $7,000 in royalty payments, so I'm just curious, have those royalty payments been close to those estimates?
I will check and get back to you momentarily on that.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else on the committee?
Mr. Chairman,
yes, please.
I just have a concern that if we approve this, are other vendors going to ask for consideration of to abate payment or somehow not make payments that are due? I'm not sure I feel very comfortable approving this based on any kind of precedent that it might set. I don't know if there can be further discussion to allay this concern. I just don't know how comfortable I am with this. And if we do not approve this, then what will happen? I'd just like more discussion on that. Thank you.
President Whitfield, do you have any comments, particularly about if we do not approve this, what's going to happen?
Sure, let me refer that to Jean Falk for that. But before that, let me just offer just almost a personal sentiment, and that is that in these times when we're having so many kinds of economic problems, we want to make sure that we keep good relationships with the folks that either lease properties from us or ones that we lease properties for. And so in some ways, this is a move that is kind of a good neighbor move. Gina, is there other details that you can provide about what the implications would be about not approving this?
Jean Bach from UNLV for the record. Just a few additional points. You are correct that, you know, we want to maintain our good partnership with our vendors. We have allowed some other rent abatements under the direction that was provided, I believe, through the governor and the legislature that some rent abatements should be allowed. In this case, I think this is a really good way of handling it because we are providing rent abatement, but in exchange, they're going to provide us with comparable advertising space. So it's a really good win-win. And by approving it as a lease amendment, rather, it does not have to be reflected as a default. So I think it is a good positive partnership relationship move.
So, President Whitfield, is it your position then that UNLV needs advertising right now in this time more than it needs money? Because that's what we're basically training, is we're getting advertising on a billboard at a time where we just discussed earlier in the meeting, and I don't believe you were here for that, but the overall state appropriation is down to $557 million for the system, where it was at $640, I think, 2 years ago. We're far, far below where we were in 2008. And it just strikes me as odd that advertising is the priority for the university at this time.
Well, I think it's not necessarily this one particular issue. I think I go back to the issue of being a good neighbor, and that, having one of our local vendors have to go into default actually hurts the economic standing of the area. And so I think this is our move in some ways to try to be a good community partner. I think, as Gene mentioned, one of the nice things, we have done other abatements, but what's nice about this one is that we're actually getting something from it. The other thing I would say about the advertising is that, we're wanting to make sure that we keep our enrollments firm, and also for the other sorts of things that are going on in the university. And so in some ways, this is a useful trade-off in some ways, because we do gain something from it. It's not a sum loss.
I have a hard time viewing Clear Channel as a local partner, and that we're getting some sort of goodwill that when this expires, they're going to remember that. I mean, Lamar would come in right behind them and take the deal if we don't offer it to Clear Channel. I'm just confused about what goodwill we're getting from a huge organization based in Texas by giving them $34,000 off. Are they going to give us, if they're having particularly good months, are they going to give us a better split going forward? I just have a real problem with this whole item. It probably could have, with the time that we're facing, the time crunch that we're already behind on the next committee going, had you taken the time to meet with the regents in advance, like your colleagues do, maybe this could have been worked out before and some of our questions answered, or we could have brought up the questions like Regent Page did of how much money has actually been paid as we look at this chart. Is it, I read in the description above, it was $7,000 was paid. Was that for all of 2019? And is that far below the estimated royalty payment? Some of these questions we could have asked weeks ago had you taken the time to meet with us, and Ms. Bach could have found out the answers, but you didn't choose to do that. So I can't support this at this time. I won't be on this committee in a month, and someone else will be chairing it. Maybe they will support it, or maybe the rest of the regents. I'm not going to stop the item from being passed if there's regents on the committee that want to propose approval and vote on it, but I will be voting no at this point because I don't think we have enough information. Are there any other regents that have questions? Yes, ma'am.
I'm not on the committee, but can I ask a question?
Certainly.
Thank you so much. President Sandoval? President Sandoval, if you don't mind, is UNR currently paying for advertising at all?
I'll defer to Vice President Redding for that. I'm not aware of it, but because I haven't seen it, but perhaps Vice President Redding would have the response.
For the record, Vic Redding, Vice President, Administration and Finance, and I apologize, I do not have that information.
But it's probably fair to say that every single college and university within the NC system has some form of advertising currently, recognizing that enrollment is a way to continue funding models and to paying for the budget that you have all prepared. Is that right? It just seems that this is a little bit unfair targeted to the University of Nevada, Las Vegas.
Any other regents have any comments or questions?
I do have one other question. Is it possible to, instead of basically releasing Clear Channel from this amount, to take this amount and put it on the end of their agreement, maybe create an amendment that just takes this $35,000 and puts it in, adds, you know, a further amount of time to their agreement at the end instead of trading in-kind advertising.
This is Keith Whitfield for the record. Gene, can you address that? Is there an option that we could do in accordance with that suggestion?
Thank you, President Whitfield. And for the record, Gene Vock from UNLV. And Regent Carvalho, thank you for the question and to the members of the committee. There are certainly different ways that we could approach this, the amendment to related to rent abatement. And in some cases, that is the option that might be considered, is to extend the lease and put the amount at the end. However, we, in our negotiations that included our team here and working with our council, we felt that that was a fair and reasonable trade to give us the benefit of having digital advertising space in the Las Vegas area in lieu of the rent abatement. We felt that that was a prudent financial trade-off for us because we do a lot of, we do digital advertising, as was noted, and they have a far-reaching opportunities for us to reach out to do, use that. So we felt that that was the most appropriate way to handle the abatement. And by doing so, with through a lease amendment rather than requiring them to go through a default, that is certainly the preferable way to work with our suppliers and our business partners. If this is not approved today, we could look at you know, perhaps an alternate, but the annual payment is due on December 21st of this year, so we would preferably have this approved in advance of that when that payment is due.
Was someone from marketing consulted to ask where they were planning on their spend this year and how digital advertising in the local Las Vegas market fit into that? And this was saving money that they would have spent otherwise. They already had a buy planned for that amount, and this saved. Is this a reduced? Are you getting a particularly good deal on the advertising compared to what the going rate is on the street?
Yeah, I just have a summary that this was reviewed with our UNLV communications team, and they believe that this is of great value. I don't have a whole lot of details about that. I can provide more detail, but they do agree that we do so much more digital advertising these days and that this would be of great value to us.
Yeah, Hayes?
Yes, Regent Page.
I want to make a motion for approval, but I would just think, I think you're going to see the situation down the road again. So I think it would be helpful, you know, after this to kind of relook at it and think of a game plan in future requests like this.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. I still think I've got too many unanswered questions that could have been handled had anyone approached us in advance of this meeting with information. I will still be a no on this, but there is a motion and a second. So if there's no further discussion, all in favor of item number. Oh, I'm sorry, Regent Carvalho.
I do have one other point of clarification, that this rent abatement, if approved, must be in addition to the value-added services that are part of this agreement already. I believe there, it's in Article 3, Section 3.01, Paragraph D, where it states that UNLV is receiving two rotating digital ad spots as part of the original agreement. So if this is approved, that this these additional spots will not be considered as part of the two original value-added spots that were in the original agreement. Thank you.
Regent Chair, would you accept that as a friendly amendment to your motion?
Yes, sir.
And Regent McMichael is the seconder. Would you accept that as a friendly amendment to your motion?
I'll accept that.
Okay. Someone is raising their hand. Was that you, President Sandoval?
It was, Mr. Chairman, but I was going to wait for the completion of your motion. I have the answer to Regent Levine's question.
We're in the discussion period here, so it might be helpful before people vote to have information. Please go ahead, President Sandoval.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The information I have is that the only advertising that our marketing area pays for is with the Airport Authority, $15,000 per year for 4 years. We have some online advertising. It is minimal. If we consider student recruitment advertising, that is primarily direct mail pieces, social media, email. So we don't have, I don't know if there's a direct correlation here, but we don't have any digital media on billboards. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Interruption.
No, it was perfect. It was very, very appropriate for the discussion. Thank you. Okay, Regent Carballo, did you have any more?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay. If there's no more discussion on this, Ms. Bach?
For the record, Jean Bach from UNLV, and just to provide clarification to Regent Carvalho's question about this, this would be, it is, the terms are such that this would be in addition to the concessions that are already provided for in the contract. I have confirmed that.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Motion passes 3-1. And with that, we'll move on to item number 13, new business. Does anybody have any new business? Seeing nothing, we'll move on to public comment. This is the opportunity for the public to comment. As the agenda is done, we definitely will not be able to discuss anything that you bring up. However, your comments will be taken seriously and could be brought forward at a future meeting as an agenda item. We welcome your comment and your thoughts at this point. So if there's anyone that would like to comment, please comment. Do we have any public comment, staff?
I have not received any more.
We have no public comment. With that, we will adjourn the meeting.